Welcome into another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. Yes, I'm Scott Manzi, opening things up today as my co-host Alex Turco is, shall we say, on the mend. Unfortunately, he is under the weather. Not to worry, though, because he does join me later on in the show, and we do talk about the AFC Championship and NFC Championship games, Championship Weekend in the NFL playoffs behind us now. Super Bowl matchup is set for Super Bowl 55, and Alex and I dive into that. So we still get that from the Mobile Ice Mule Coolers studios today, and we have much more. I will get into a couple of segments at the end of things as, boy, we have an all-time Waller of the Week that I can't wait to get into as well. And we, I do want to run through a few other items on the agenda before we're all said and done. But Alex is going to join me here in just a brief period of time. We will talk about all of that football. But first, again, coming to you from the Mobile Ice Mule Coolers studios today, Sports Bar 15 to check out for 15% off your ice mule cooler. Get one for your dad, your mom, your brother, your sister, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your best friend, yourself, heck, even. You won't regret it. Alex and I love our ice mule cooler, and we use them all the time. And we recommend that you get one for yourself as well, whether or not you're just sitting at home right now, which is probably the best option, and you just don't want to get up and walk back and forth to the refrigerator on Saturday. Or maybe you're outside in an area in which you can enjoy some of the outdoor activities. Maybe you even like the snow. Who knows? Get an ice mule cooler today. Sports Bar 15 to check out to enjoy an ice mule cooler. I want to start off by hitting on just a couple of things here with you today. There have been a couple of things, news, notes that have run throughout the course of the sports world in the past week since we last recorded with you all. And first and foremost, one of these is national, one of these is more local, but I think they all apply. And I want to start off with what happened with the Mets GM who lost his job last week. And I know we keep things light on this program, but I do have a platform here. And when Alex isn't around, then sometimes I'm able to completely dictate what the platform looks like. And I just have to get a few things out there because it struck a chord with me. I mean, I work in athletics, college athletics, and I have the privilege and the joy to work with quite a few women and have had the privilege and the honor to work for women in this field. And it has been eye-opening and a great experience, and there needs to be more of it. I mean, we need more women in sports, and it doesn't just start and stop with studio hosts or sideline reporters or, you know, people that work in student athlete services and academics in college departments and things like that. No, we need more in the realm of coaches and administrators and broadcasters and reporters. And I mean, the list goes on and on. Officials, like we just need more because everything's better. And this isn't me saying, like, replace all the men's jobs with women. We need balance. Like, life is better with balance. Too much of anything is never good. And with more women in athletics, we can bring more balance. And especially on the men's side of things where, man, there's so much testosterone everywhere all the time. Like, we just need to find a way to find that and bring that balance into things. And like I've had an opportunity now over the years to work with some students and offer some guidance, some mentorship to them, men and women, young men and young women. And I have been able to play part in the hiring of women for positions in athletics. I'm not telling you that so that you can sit there and pat me on the back or tell me I did a good job. No, that's not what this is for. This is just me saying that, like, I'm trying to do my part, and I can do better. Like, we can all do better in this, but it starts at the basic level, holding each other accountable, involving considering and bringing women into the fold when it comes to various jobs in athletics, not shoehorning people into specific things. And then when they're there, treating them the way they should be treated. Like, we should all be treating each other the same way. I know there's quote unquote locker room talk and the way guys do things with other guys and stuff, but just have decorum. Like, just don't be a bad person. Have some idea of how to treat people in an everyday environment and apply that in these type of situations. And then you shouldn't end up with spots like we saw with the former disgraced, now and rightfully so, Mets GM from a week ago. And I don't want to turn this into a rant or a lecture or anything like that, but I've listened to some interviews, I've read some pieces, and you know, it hits home when it's something that you're close to. And I just this week had a coworker who is female take a new job and she's leaving. And like, I am sad about that. But at the same time, we were able to hire another woman to come in and do a different job in the department. And I'm excited about that. I mean, that's just what it's about. And I think it's made me better. And I think it would do everybody a world of good to just find themselves in situations where they have to be better people because of who they are surrounded by and what they can bring to the table. Life is not about echo chambers. It's about broadening our horizons. And while women have made great strides in the world of athletics, especially in the men's side of athletics over the years, we can always do better. And I'm pledging to do that, and I hope that the rest of you do too. Second thing I wanted to get to here today in this open is talking about something a little more local. And I've heard a lot of people and their feedback, and it was about actually a week ago, right after Alex and I finished recording last week's episode, that the Lot J plan here in Jacksonville was officially voted down by the city council. And for those that are not here in Jacksonville or may not be aware, there was a big push led by the Jaguars and the mayor of Jacksonville to bring a mixed-use development to the city of Jacksonville and build it right next to the Jaguar Stadium, TIAA Bank Field, on what is currently a parking lot that is used for parking and tailgating for Jaguars games and other events that happen down at the sports complex. And it fell one vote shy of getting the votes it needs. And if you really want to know more about the details of why it didn't work and what kind of the background on all that is, I really encourage that you go listen to my brother's podcast, shameless plug here, Dimes on Duval. He had Nate Monroe, who's a Metro columnist for the Florida Times Union here in Jacksonville, who has been covering this from day one. And he was able to really answer a lot of Keith, my brother, and Mike Yazgi, both of them have been on this program before, but answered all of their questions and really explained things. And I've been following this from the beginning, and he still explained it better than even I could have. So I don't want to dive into the nuts and bolts. I just want to, number one, direct you to that if you want to learn more about it. But also, I read a column from Mark Woods in the Times Union this week, this past Sunday as well. And I thought it was really appropriate. And it kind of speaks to the whole nature of why the NFL can succeed and hopefully will be on its way to succeeding with its on-field product again here in Jacksonville, whereas other sports, professional sports, may not. And the NFL, for a variety of reasons, is just better built to succeed in small markets. And Jacksonville is undoubtedly a small market. But whereas a small market, say in the NBA, would probably lose the good players that would allow for it to be a dominant force and a championship contender, even baseball runs into that problem with payroll issues and being able to quote unquote afford the big name guys to fuel the smaller market teams, which is why you see the LAs and the New Yorks constantly near the top. the way though the revenue sharing structure is in the NFL, it just makes it to where we can have a weekend like we just had, where your Final Four in the NFL this past week were Kansas City, Buffalo, Tampa, and Green Bay, none of which would be considered a major media market, none of which would be considered a place where you would assume huge names and major free agents would go to play in other sports in. None of those places are world-renowned locales that have name recognition that precedes anything that happens in an athletic realm. But they host the four best franchises in the NFL this past year. And for Jacksonville, number one, that should give you hope. And obviously, we've had a franchise here that has been one of the four best at the end of the season three times before in the 25-plus year history of the franchise. And the pieces are in place to get back to that. But it also ties into the Lot J deal, which is what Mark Woods pointed out, in the fact that you don't need that to be a viable NFL franchise, the way that it was pitched to the city of Jacksonville, that Lot J has to be built, otherwise the Jaguars aren't a viable franchise. Well, that's obviously not true. How does a team in Green Bay, Wisconsin end up viable? How does a team in Buffalo, New York end up viable? It's because they've invested in the product in the field. They invest in the community, and they embrace the nature of who they are, almost a small market. The NFL is so unique in the way that tailgating occurs. I mean, outside of maybe like Miller Park in Milwaukee, which I know is not called Miller Park anymore, but it's always Miller Park to me, whatever. For the Brewers, there's not a ton of tailgating in, say, Major League Baseball. The NBA, of course, it's played a lot of times in the throughout the course of the winter, so it makes it difficult. But you don't tailgate before an NBA game. There, for the major sports, you don't tailgate before an NHL game. You know, and I can go on and on. For the major sports, tailgating for professional football is as much a part of the experience as anything else is. Lot J just happens to be one of the large lots that is used for tailgate. I tailgate in Lot J, all the time with friends. And I'm not saying that because like I'm glad that Lot J development isn't happening so I can continue to tailgate there in a post-COVID world when we can safely do that again. And boy, I can't wait. I say that because you don't have to have a glitz and glam bar district next to a stadium at the NFL level to be successful. At the end of the day, people will come. If you build it, they will come. I know is a baseball reference, but really it applies to football and how the NFL works. If you build the franchise, they will come. Jaguars fans came in droves to the stadium in 2017 when the team was good. They came in droves at the beginning of 2018 when everybody thought the team was still good and they were kind of playing like that. They will come out regardless. And granted, sure, I'd like to see some stadium improvements. Those four places, Buffalo would be the one that is really talking about stadium improvements. Kansas City's made some stadium improvements. Tampa's certainly built a new stadium in the last 30 years. Those type of things help. But man, people want to support a winner. And when there is a limited amount of games on the calendar, the NFL is not an 86-game home schedule like you have in baseball. It's not a 40-something game home schedule like you have in the NBA or 50-ish game home schedule like you have in the NHL. There isn't this level of, I need other elements of entertainment on top of it. Like, people just want to see a winning franchise because there's only really, and this is if the team's even playing all their games at home, like the Jaguars will, you know, haven't done in the last several years, there's only 8 chances to even see them if you don't count the playoffs and if you don't count a team playing games in London. It's a limited product, which makes people crave it more, right? What people can't have more than enough of, they want more of. That's part of what has made the NFL so successful. It's finite. There's so much more that happens other than the games that we find ourselves insatiated by the games. Build a winner here in Jacksonville. Don't build a bar district. Don't build like that stuff. If we want to talk about development of downtown, that's a whole nother story. Build a winner on the field, and that, trust me, will make the Jaguars a viable franchise in the NFL. Just look at what we saw this past weekend with the championship weekend of the playoffs. On that note, why don't we talk more about the championship weekend in the NFL playoffs? And with that, I'm going to go ahead and call in my buddy, my co-host, and my under-the-weather pal, Alex Turco. Let's dive into it. This is a little unconventional, but we're welcoming my co-host, Alex Turco, in for a segment. I mean, unprecedented times called for unprecedented type measures. And Alex, while you're a little bit laid up right now, we wanted to keep things a little bit light on you, but could not have you on to talk about what happened in the championship weekend of the NFL playoffs. So thanks for kind of bucking up and fighting it and coming on here with me.
Yeah,
as the other half of the Sports Bar Podcast.
Let's just say I'll be laid up for about 10 plus 1 days. Thankfully, I do not have terrible symptoms. But Scott, I want to thank you for having me on here to the Sports Bar Podcast. It's an honor. I'm an avid listener. I listen to every episode, never missed one, truly, never missed an episode. And this is my first time being a guest on the show, so I'm very excited about that.
Well, glad to have you on, I guess. Like, what do you go? First time, long time?
Yeah, that's right. 5'8", 170.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't Dan Patrick do that?
Yeah, exactly. With the boxing bell for the weigh in. But we'll keep it. We're gonna keep it locked into pretty much one subject matter here. But couldn't
and then
go,
let me go to sleep.
Yeah, and then you can go continue recuperating. And we certainly hope to have you back to full strength here sooner rather than later. And glad to hear that the symptoms are not what they are certainly capable of being for yep. many others. But let's start with this. Let's get right into Championship Sunday.
I had an opportunity, Championship Sunday. I know we're going right into it.
Yeah.
I can promise you I watched every minute of it because I was right here on that couch. So I didn't move much.
So your analysis should be as sharp as ever, we're hoping for here.
If not, I'll just blame it on the virus.
Championship Sunday, we'll start with the first game, which was the better game, the NFC Championship. We had Packers hosting the Buccaneers. We got robbed of snow. It was in the forecast for the second week in a row. There was snow on the ground. There was no snow falling or on the field, which was a little bit disappointing. But the game itself was not disappointing. Maybe some of the decisions made by certain players and coaches were disappointing throughout the course of it, but we had a pretty good one that had some runs, had some moments, had some offense, had some defense, had some head scratching type deals, but it was certainly kind of what we thought going into it. The type of game that we thought we'd see. I think just the result was a little bit surprising, was it not?
Well, I mean, a little bit surprising, yes, but the Bucs have been playing some good football, so it wasn't overly surprising when you get to this point that an underdog wins this late in the season, championship round. But I think the way the Packers have been playing, I picked them.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people picked them.
I did.
It was a revenge spot as well where they got their ass kicked earlier in the season, and you just thought, no way you're going to tag Aaron Rodgers twice across the jaw, and the Bucs did just that and made him look average in two straight games. And he had his moments in yesterday's game, of course, or Sunday's game. But, you know, there were some coaching errors that everyone's going to point to. But let's just remember, as much of a coaching flub it was going for a field goal. And maybe you want to talk about the pass interference call that they didn't get, or the
one that was thrown on that last drive.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. But as much as a lot of people are talking about that today, I keep pointing out that the Packers left a lot of touchdowns out on the field. They had opportunity after opportunity and just didn't cash in. They were kicking field goals left and right, even before the one where it was like third and goal and the game on the line and you need a touchdown, whether you kick a field goal or not, you're still going to need a touchdown. And then they kicked a field goal when they were down, what was it, 8?
Yeah, it was an 8-point game.
Yeah,
and
8-point.
I mean, at that point, you're a touchdown and a 2-point conversion away. And it doesn't make much sense to sit there and make it harder on yourself, I guess. And of course, they had chased points earlier in the game as well. And it was just, there were some interesting choices in that one. We'll just, I guess, leave it at that. It's no one thing, right? I mean, it wasn't just Matt LaFleur electing to kick field goals. It wasn't just the offense kind of sputtering out in the red zone. It wasn't just the fact that the Packers defense got beat deep a handful. You know, that's how these games go. It all adds up a little bit.
And I'm glad you said that too. And we always say game of inches, the age old cliche. In this case, it was a game of big plays. The Bucs had the bomb with 6 seconds left before half. Instead of punting, they're like, you know what? Let's go rip it. See if we can get something to happen. How is Kevin King not playing further back? And why is he peeking in the backfield? The only thing you can't let him do there is score.
Well, and it's so funny because that play, you and I, we've been on this train for a million years, but that's because we both have very light experience as DBs in our career. But like, you know, the one thing you can't do is being watching the ball. Like the thing you've got to do is find a way. You got to lock down that man, and that is your only responsibility in a situation like that. And then he's watching the ball the whole time and gets beat deep instead of like checking even to make sure that like he's still step for step. Scotty Miller burns him because he's sitting there, where's the ball type thing.
It was unbelievable. So, I mean, I know a lot of people want to point to those crucial moment errors, and they should. The Packers could have won the game if they went for it on fourth down and got it. But what if they didn't? We still can look back to that Scotty Miller touchdown before half, and then we can look back to multiple plays where the Bucs had big plays and the defensive backs got beat. Jaire Alexander, a lot of times, wasn't even covering Mike Evans, which I thought was weird. Chris Godwin had a lot of drops. I mean, there were a lot of plays left out on the field for both teams, truth be told. There were a lot of drops by the Bucs receivers, and I wonder how that's gonna impact their offense moving forward. I mean, it was unbelievable. There were a lot of balls bouncing off hands.
Yeah. What do you think about, we'll close the book here on the Packers. This group, do you feel like they made it to back-to-back NFC championship games? Obviously had a chance to win this one. The game last year was over from the opening kickoff. They were outmatched physically from the get-go by the 49ers, but is this still a group that you feel like is trending in the right direction? I mean, they have an older quarterback, obviously. The defense is better this year. The receivers are better than people thought. But like, is this a group that you expect to be right back there next year in the playoffs and potentially making a Super Bowl run?
I do. I'm not hitting the panic button on them. I know last year a lot of people were hitting the panic button. This year, again, people are saying, hey, 2 years back-to-back, same kind of story. They make it there, but not enough to finish. They didn't have Aaron Jones in the second half, and they didn't have Bakhtiari, their best, maybe the best tackle in the game, that is, but their best offensive tackle without question. And Jason Pierre-Paul and Barrett, what's his name? Shaq Barrett.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They were hot knife through butter the whole game. They were dominating the backup tackle, Crofton or whatever his name was. But they really, really struggled to protect Aaron Rodgers, and he still had a pretty damn good day. I don't think all of a sudden he's going to hang it up, even though he loves the attention and is going to say, oh, I don't know what the future holds for me. That's just typical Aaron pouty Rodgers. He's going to go host Jeopardy.
Between him and Big Ben, I don't know who's going to drag this thing out any more than the other
one. No one feels sorrier for themselves in the world than those two guys. Those two guys are like, pity party. The world is crashing down at every negative moment. But I, Scott, am not worried about the Packers at all. They have a young corner in Alexander. They have their defense overall is pretty young. They need a little bit of help shoring that up. But AJ Dillon looks like a very, very good backup running back. Aaron Jones is a stud. Devontae Adams, best receiver in football. I know he didn't have his best game, but throughout this season, I thought he was outstanding, and they add one slot guy to that offense, and we're going to say, man, the Packers are amazing.
Yeah, maybe they'll actually draft a receiver this year as opposed to a backup QB.
I hope they do. Yeah, I hope they do, because you have Lazard on the outside. He's good. Deep threat in
Marquez Valdez Scantling.
Valdez MVS. Scantling. MVS. Yeah. I know. I was like, man, hold on. I need his initials here. I'll blame that on the COVID. But yeah. And then Davante Adams and Tonyan at tight end. They're completely fine. They just need to protect him a little bit better. And they were a couple plays away from going to the Super Bowl and us saying, wow, look at that rally.
Yeah. Aaron Jones got a hold on the ball, though. I mean, fumbles it. He fumbled it twice. They recovered one of them.
That fumble was bad.
The one that he lost was a backbreaker type deal. So that's something he's got to work on. But, you know, running backs can work on that kind of stuff and get better at it. So maybe he'll continue to do that. All right. Let's switch gears over to the AFC Championship game. And this was one where you hit on it a moment ago that it felt like the Bucs and the Packers equally had good moments and bad moments throughout the course of that game. And it was that's why it was sort of ebbing and flowing throughout the course of it. The other side, the Kansas City Chiefs may have put together their best game of the entire season and looked like the team that we expected all season long with their performance. I mean, they just chewed up and spit out the Buffalo Bills, and they made a huge mistake in like the first 5 minutes of the game, and it felt like they didn't make a mistake the rest of it. It was impressive.
When Hardman fumbled that ball, I immediately went and live bet the Kansas City Chiefs, because I was like, they're down 9 because they missed that extra point to make it 10.
Yep.
And I was like, man, this is cake for them. They can score on one play.
I mean, they went 21-0 after that, I think it was. And
yep.
Yeah.
And they got Hardman involved in the very next drive, which I loved, because I felt so bad for him when he muffed that. I was like, that poor guy was running without the football.
It was funny and yet not funny at the same time, because I felt bad for him. But like when he went to the sideline, the camera showing him, and he just took the big jacket and just threw it over his head and went hiding.
Yeah. I love it. And they're like, he's trying to hide, and everyone's taking the jacket off to clear him up. And I'm like, this guy just wants to be in his turtle shell.
But that speaks to the kind of the culture of that Chiefs group, right? I mean, it felt like the entire team went over there. Maybe minus Tyreek Hill, who definitely isn't ever helping out a teammate. But everybody else went over there and was like, hey, man, chin up. Like, we got him next time. We're keeping you. Like, you're a huge part of this type deal. And that speaks to why this franchise has been so good the last, I mean, beyond the Super Bowl. I mean, they were a playoff regular before that. And now they're they're approaching the opportunity of dynasty status here. I mean, they can go 2 in a row, and I don't think anybody would doubt their ability to go back the following year either. So the Chiefs are, it's just amazing how the Buffalo Bills were playing. We talked about it on this program last week, Alex. The Bills were playing as good a defense as anybody in the playoffs as a whole, right? Like, they shut out
Lamar Jackson
and the Ravens. Like, they were just dominant down the stretch in the season. Like, people felt like that was an X factor in this game, that the Bills defense, as good as they were playing, would be able to limit the Chiefs offense some. And they weren't. I mean, the Chiefs got whatever they wanted on offense.
Whatever they wanted. Yep. Once they got rolling, and we've said this, this is a national headline also, a national talking point, more like it. But everyone was saying they have let teams hang around.
Yeah.
When are they going to let a team hang around too long and not have time to flip the switch on? And that's what everyone says, flip the switch, because we see them fall behind or play tight and then all of a sudden just turn it on and stop being cute and all of a sudden do what the Chiefs do and put points up on the board. Tyreek Hill, Hardman, you name the guy, Sammy Watkins when he's healthy, Clyde Edwards-Helaire for you, Scott.
He's
back in the lineup. And last night, they turned it on early, and they left it on the whole game. And that defense is not bad either. Everyone wants to point to that offense. Their defense, even last year, was pretty good. But this
I don't feel
year,
like it's quite as good as last year's. Yep. I mean, I thought they were just a little more consistent and just – pressure, like getting pressure with 4 last year. But I mean, they still got the horses. They've got Frank Clark, they've got Chris Jones, and then they got the wild card in Tyrann Mathieu, who's a guy that's all over the field. There's three of them, right? It feels
absolute
like.
Playmaker. Yeah. Yeah, he's cut from that Troy Polamalu cloth.
Yeah.
Where Bob Sanders, just kind of doesn't have a position, just let him play deep almost. Safety or yeah. in the box. He gets to pick based on the lineup. But, you know, they turned it on early and often. And we were reminded that Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. Everyone wants to talk about the toe or the concussion. He was sharp. I mean, there was nothing that he couldn't do last night. And he's thrown on the run, thrown
overhand,
off his back foot.
Underhand, sidearm.
Yeah.
Had it all.
It doesn't make sense. He's so fun to watch. You can't not like him because he's also not – he's not a dick. Like, he's fun to watch. Yeah. He doesn't talk trash. But I did see it was on Twitter, and he posted a, like, yawning emoji, I guess, or like a shh emoji, one of the two. I couldn't tell. The emoji was too small for my old eyes. But what it was a stat that ESPN put up of all of the boxes of QB play, defense, head coach, intangibles, essentially, and they were checking off who had the advantage between the Chiefs and the Bills based on those boxes that they had up. And for QB, they had the Bills checked off as having the advantage and having Josh Allen because he could run, because he's big, whatever their reasoning was. Patrick Mahomes afterwards, you know, he didn't take that, as Michael Jordan says, and I took that personally.
Yeah.
Because he did not like that. And he made sure to remind everyone he is the GOAT.
Yes. There are guys that are scratching and clawing underneath him, but for the Lamar Jacksons and the Josh Allens of the world, they're still looking up at Patrick Mahomes and what he and the Chiefs are able to do. For the Bills, though, it still feels like they're almost in a better spot than the Packers, if that makes any sense, because they're younger and they have a quarterback that has a chance to continue to get better and do this longer. Whereas obviously Aaron Rodgers is still very good, but in more of the backside of his career. I mean, Allen, we got to tip our caps for a dude that took the leap this year. I mean, he went from the dude in the playoffs last year that looked overwhelmed and was sitting there doing weird option plays out of desperation in the second half and turning the ball over. He was a huge reason why the Bills won the division for the first time in forever, won a playoff game for the first time in forever, had a chance to go to a Super Bowl for the first time in forever. And the Bills, you know, they got to get a little better running game, I think. They may have to.
Oh, it was terrible.
They may have to adjust. And granted, they're without a guy, but you should be able to find somebody else. You know, you should have.
Oh, I don't think Zach Moss is some all-star. But
No, they could upgrade that position in general. And they may have to replace their offensive coordinator, who obviously was so good at getting the most out of Josh Allen. Brian Daboll, very popular candidate for, are there any jobs left open? The Texans?
No, he said he's staying, I thought.
He said he's staying? Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure he's staying. I mean,
so that's a huge win for the Bills. Yep. That's a huge win for them. I mean, that may be the biggest offseason win for the Bills. I mean,
keeping Josh Allen with some continuity as the play caller. Sorry to cut you off, but I do have a question for you. After watching that game, first of all, Allen could have thrown two picks in the first quarter. One was straight up. Well, both of them actually were straight up dropped in the first quarter.
I think he threw them so dang hard that the DBs couldn't hang on.
We're not receivers. We can't catch this shit. What do you want from us? That's what it felt like. One of them to 35, I can't remember his name. I mean, like, in both hands. And then the other one I thought was a pick, and the guy came up and had dropped it. It was Breland. Mm-hmm. Yep. But two picks, he looked – they were up 9-0 at this point, too. And even at 9-7, eyes wide open, and he's going back 40 yards and trying to stiff arm.
He took some really – like, some of the worst sacks I've ever seen in a football game. And he took multiple of them last night.
It's like his head wasn't there. So I wanted to ask you, the reason I brought this up is I've been impressed with him all year. I've had to eat my words on Josh Allen. I do think he's going to be good. But, man, did he – the moment was too big for him. He was absolutely terrified. I mean, do you have – you say that you like the Packers going into next season better because they're younger. Did you think Josh Allen looked like he had any kind of chutzpah to get you through – a playoff game?
You said Packers. I know you meant Bills for that, where I said
No. I'm saying you said
I said I like the Bills better because they're younger.
Okay. Well, what I meant here is
the Packers
your,
are younger.
Your initial question is you almost like the Bill. A lot of people like the Bills moving forward over the Packers because they're a younger team.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. So, that's it. Yeah. I think Josh Allen.
I like
Allen,
the Packers because they've been there, their experience. I don't have to project. I know what they are.
I like the Bills because they're still upside. Like Josh Allen, yes, that moment, it ended up being too much. I mean, it was just too much. They were asking so much of him last night because they literally could not run the football. He had to try and he has, this is a good and a bad thing where he is like, I'm going to be Superman. And he has a skill set that allows him to be Superman sometimes. But then he does things like take 40-yard sacks trying to be Superman or doesn't throw the ball away or, you know, things like that.
He's Big Ben where he runs that far back and stiff arms, yeah. Whereas Big Ben will do that and then throw it away or throw it downfield. And it may be a pick, but it also may be a touchdown or a first down.
Guess
he
what?
Just the Bills, held the ball forever.
The Bills are a team that are a couple of pieces away from, I think, being – now, it's tough because what the Chiefs are right now are unquestionably the best team in the AFC. They were last year. They are this year. They probably will be again next year, barring injury, of course. But I do think that the Bills, with a few more pieces around Josh Allen, are a team that is good enough to win a Super Bowl. Josh Allen is a good enough quarterback to win a Super Bowl if this isn't a one-hit wonder year, which I don't know. It could be. Cam Newton had a one-hit wonder year, right? Like, he won an MVP, and they went 15-1, and he went to a Super Bowl, and he was never the same quarterback again after that. I'm inclined to not think because I'm just inclined to not think that that's the way this is going to be. And I do think that the Bills have better weapons than the Panthers, even in their peak, ever had. I mean, it was Cam Newton and then a bunch of, you know, Jericho Cotcheries.
I don't even remember his receivers.
I think Jericho Cotchery. I don't know. I may be.
He
may
was
be,
there at a point.
He played for the Panthers at some point.
Oh, Kelvin Benjamin for that brief stint.
He had like 1 year and then he got hurt and then he got fat and then.
Yeah, got was really all over fat.
So that's where I, like, look, the Bills are best set up in the East out of any team. You have to feel the best about them, right? Like, they're the only one that has a quarterback. They're the only one that has a lot of these weapons. They have coaching continuity. One of those teams is breaking in a new coach. I think that they're probably going into next year. I like them, again, as the second-best team in the AFC. And I just like what they represent. I just think they have a really good, speaking of the culture of the Chiefs, what Sean McDermott's done there in taking that franchise to new heights. I mean, they blew that thing up after they made the playoffs in 2017, basically. I mean, they squeaked into the playoffs, lost to the Jaguars. And then it was like, oh, wow, what a great one-time moment that was for the Bills, who needed an Andy Dalton heroic performance against the Ravens to make it in or whatever. But
that's
then,
right.
But then they've been better since then, after the one-year kind of drop-off when they were able to draft Allen. And the last 2 years, they've just been getting better. So I think that they've got something positive going there.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they're fun to watch. They have a hard-nosed coach with McDermott. You already mentioned all the positives they have. I don't think there's a lot of negatives, assuming they're not losing someone I don't know about in free agency. I mean, having Diggs come back and getting a red zone threat would be nice for them, whether it's a tight end or a...
They could really use a tight end.
Yeah. I mean, Knox is okay, but they...
Like a tight end, you know?
Right.
Like, I mean, they don't have to go get Travis Kelce, obviously,
but
because
that guy's
another level, but like, it's almost like unfair that the Chiefs have all those weapons and then Travis Kelce, who's like the best tight end in the game.
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable. They are absolutely loaded, but it doesn't hurt to also have Mahomes throwing to them.
No doubt. No doubt. Okay, we won't get into like a true like Super Bowl preview, things like that. We still got a whole week before we can get into that. I just want to say one thing that you, one item that you first blush that you're thinking about with the Super Bowl.
I don't know if it's recency bias or what, but I'm feeling the Bucks right now.
All right.
I know the Chiefs looked awesome. I have 2 weeks to mull this over, that pass rush is something that they haven't had all year. Vita Vey coming back in, I'm sure, helped occupy two guys. He's just a big dude. Eric Fisher towards Achilles and is out for the game.
That hurts.
I just saw what Shaq Barrett and JPP did against the Packers O-line. And part of me's thinking the Bucs might take this. That's Titletown USA right now.
The first thing that comes to mind with me is that everyone for the next 2 weeks, we're going to hear ad nauseum the GOAT against the rising star or the next GOAT or whatever you want to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But this Super Bowl is really a referendum on if the old adage, does defense win championships, actually ring true still. Because if the Buccaneers win the Super Bowl, it'll be because their defense kept Mahomes and the Chiefs' offense at least relatively in check. If the Chiefs are able to do what they're capable of on offense, there's absolutely no way that Bucs offense can keep up. There's just no way. And well, I don't want to say that the Bucs are winning despite the offense, because the offense is still doing good things. But Brady's just chucking picks all over the place. and their defense has been lights out, I feel like, when it matters. They get the turnovers when it matters. They get the stops when it matters. They are just making life difficult much of this season. And when they have won games, I feel like the defense is the star. And I feel like that's going to be the case of the Super Bowl again. If they win this Super Bowl, it almost feels so Tampa. It almost feels so perfectly Tampa that they may win a Super Bowl for the second time ever, and it'd be because of a defensive performance when they have had one of the best defenses of all time to win a Super Bowl. But this is a group that I feel like, maybe it's because they brought the pewter back or something, but it feels almost throwback the way that this defense operates in a way. They're not quite to that level of the Warren Sapp and Simeon Rice and Derek Brooks and Dexter Jackson, who out of all guys was the MVP of that Super Bowl.
Rondae Barber. Yeah. I mean, that was my favorite team. I was huge Bucs fan that year because it was like FSU pro team.
Yeah, right.
You know, they just had everyone. Greg Spires was on the team. Yes. Work Dunn was on it the year before. Mm-hmm. He didn't get the ring. It didn't overlap quite right. But yeah, Brad Johnson at QB. Yep. But I think you got to give the offense a little bit more credit than you do. Tom Brady looked extremely sharp in that first half. Second half didn't look like he knew how to play football, which was odd. A lot of
weird
drops from receivers.
Weird decisions, weird threat. But that's just the thing. Like, and I said it last week on the show, this offense is never hitting on all cylinders. We never see from this Bucs offense what we saw from the Chiefs yesterday on Sunday.
Like, that's fair.
We have not seen that one time this season.
Where they're just tearing the
world where they're just dialed in and everything looks great. Like, for every two great plays that Bucs offense makes, they make like a really bad one.
I really thought the Gronk screen, I mean, they had a lot
that was great.
They had a lot of great plays. It feels like they're starting to hit on all cylinders. I know they haven't quite done it yet, Scott, but I think they're close. Antonio Brown coming back next week is going to be huge. Between the four receivers, Scotty Miller, Brown, because Johnson, Tarian Johnson, or whatever his name is, had a huge drop down the seam.
Yeah. But you agree with me that if this turns into just a shootout,
I want it to be so bad, though.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
It'd be exciting.
I don't think anyone wins a shootout with the Chiefs.
No, that's the thing. Like, their offense is better than everyone's. So if they're clicking, then sorry, but you're second best. You're never going to work. Ask the Raiders even, you know?
Yeah.
Derek Carr plays the game of his freaking life and just watches the Chiefs drive down in 1 minute and win the game on him.
That's right. Yes, I forgot about that. So this is an early season matchup where the Chiefs came out and annihilated the Bucs in the first half.
They jumped out to a huge lead on Sunday night or Monday night. Yeah. And then they just cruised.
Decided to coast.
Yeah.
And
then it got interesting.
And they got very interesting. Yeah. The Bucs ended up sneaking back within a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait a minute, the Bucs might win this game where they really shouldn't even be in this at all. So I'm interested to see if that meant nothing, if that's a preview of what we saw, if the Bucs kind of got confidence near the end.
Good questions.
I don't know, but it's going to be a fun Super Bowl. Yeah. It's a good matchup. I selfishly was hoping to see the Bills just for fun, but I think this is the better matchup.
Hey, quickly here. Do you remember at the beginning of the season, preseason, when we did our team in each league that we think could surprise and which one we think might disappoint? Do you remember which ones you said?
Disappoint? I think I said Packers.
I said the Packers.
You did?
Yeah, so I don't think you did.
Oh, I said 49ers.
You did, and you ended up being right. Now, injuries certainly played a lot into that.
Yes, but I said 49ers because I was like, teams just don't go back-to-back usually. And I just don't like
if they had stayed healthy. Enough. I don't know. They may have, because Kyle Shanahan gets the most out of whoever everyone. He's working with.
I love him. Yeah. But disappointment to me was
they were definitely
didn't mean not make the playoffs. I didn't know they'd be that bad.
Yeah. You ended up being right in the long run.
But they had to start Nick Mullins and, you know, Joe CJ Blow. Bedford. Yeah. Well, exactly. Joe Blow. Sorry.
You remember your AFC?
Did I say, what, underachieved? Did I say Bills?
I think I said the Bills. So the runner ups in each league, I think, were my disappointing teams, my preseason disappointing teams. And
wait,
I had the
so
Lions.
You're asking me this question? You don't even actually know our answers?
I don't know your answers. I'm asking you yours.
Oh,
because
okay.
Mine were my disappointments were Packers and Bills, and my overachieves were Lions and Dolphins. So I think I got the Dolphins. I get credit for that.
Yep.
Because they definitely were better. They were a surprise. They were
Lions,
better.
Lions so
fired
much.
Their coach. Yep. And
yeah.
Yep. So that was way off. I was obviously way off on my disappointments because both teams were, the Bills were definitely better, and the Packers, you could say, arguably were better than they were a year ago because they didn't get blown out in the NFC Championship game.
No, I can't remember who I said.
I can't either. Yeah. Well, we'll just blame your coronavirus brain for not being able to
remember
that right
foggy
now.
Mind.
It's a little
foggy.
A little foggy. All right. Well, should have written him down. You know,
it could be somewhere.
I'll get the historian of the show on that at some point. Maybe we can check those.
Get our intern on that.
Later on. Yeah. Hey, check that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look,
on
they
it.
Just texted me. I got the answer.
I tease on it.
Yeah.
But all right. So we'll finish this. Of course, we'll get in more to the Super Bowl next week. As we enter the week of the game, actually. No, we will not be doing a fake Pro Bowl preview at any point on this show because, number one, they're not playing the Pro Bowl. Number two, who cares? If the Pro Bowl isn't played and nobody watches, does anybody care? I don't know. No, the joke is everybody actually does watch the Pro Bowl because it outrates like Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals somehow. It's mind-blowing, but...
I mean, not from us,
not from us.
Big NHL fans.
Yeah, not.
We don't miss an NHL game, especially a game 7.
I have watched a couple of minutes of NHL this year.
Have you?
Yes.
Good for you, Scott.
Yeah. I'll be flipping through channels. You know, you're flipping through channels. And
I can't stay the same.
I'll sit there and be like, all right, am I really? I ain't watching ACC basketball outside of Florida State this year. Cause like you couldn't pay me to watch like Georgia Tech play basketball this season like that.
GT just waxed Clemson right before we did.
The league is so bad. I mean, it is just, this is the worst ACC I can ever remember in my life.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, Virginia's over here putting a number on 9-4 Syracuse.
You wanted to say something at least about the now ranked again.
I was
going to
say, if we're going to let me talk about,
yeah, go for it.
I've been watching a lot more basketball actually. I've just because I'm getting a little sad that, NFL and
football's
college
coming
football
to a close.
Is already.
Well, we
got to
have something
NFL.
To talk about here.
Yeah, you're right. Good thing I'm watching it. So
better lay some tape.
I'm glad that I have this moment before I go off to a wonderful, wonderful Z-Quil induced sleep tonight. Mm-hmm. Florida State is finally getting a little bit of respect nationally. Everyone, not just Florida State fans, were pissed off that they weren't ranked. Guess who? The people that do rankings are bitching about them not being ranked. It is pretty funny to hear that.
The irony.
Guys that have a vote are like, can you believe this team's not ranked? It's like, well, yeah, jackass. You had them at 27 the past 2 weeks. And then all we do after a COVID 2 weeks off where we slide out of the top 25 for not playing for some reason, we don't play a game and we slide out. No big deal.
And did lose to Clemson, but.
Lost to Clemson and then didn't play.
Right.
They,
so
they
all
like
the
no
people remembered were losses or
yeah,
one
I get
loss.
That.
And,
I
yeah,
get so. That. So then we go stomp Louisville at Louisville. We stomp NC State like crazy. It was like 105-72, something like that. Offense is hitting on all cylinders. We beat North Carolina. And then we just 2 nights ago or 3 days ago now, this past Saturday, dominate. To get revenge, Clemson. We could have named our number. We called off the dogs just to give them a chance. Yeah. We won by 19. I was pissed. I just wanted to see us win by 20 plus just for the insult to say, hey, don't forget, we're the reigning ACC champs.
Yeah. And that's for Dabo.
That one's for Dabo. Yeah. That's for our football team because they can't stand up for themselves. So, man, Scott, this is the most energy I've had in 7 days. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm glad I can assist with that.
And I'm not even mad. This is happiness. I just want to say Leonard Hamilton, right when I start to doubt this team, and it's not Leonard Hamilton. I can't doubt that guy anymore. He's proved me wrong for, you know,
you and everyone else.
8+ seasons now, I've flipped my opinion on him. So I'm all in on Coach Ham and what he does and the way he instills team and effort, teamwork, team unity. These guys play for each other. They come in substitutions of waves. I just really want to tip my cap to him and say, I love watching this team, and he got a young team to play together during COVID. And I'm not talking about during a COVID season. I mean, during that break of COVID where they weren't playing games.
Yep.
Somehow came out of that break where it looks like everything was figured out.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive.
Scotty Barnes is hitting threes. I've warned you about Shadir Calhoun. I said, do not let him find a rhythm. He is the purest offensive player on our team, on the entire roster. Anthony Polite, our best on-ball defender, has been out for 4 games now. Raekwon Gray had to sit the first half against Clemson for two early fouls. And we didn't miss a beat. I mean, they're just so fun to watch. They have so many guys. They bring wave after wave. Koprivica is playing amazing. I mean, we're really finding our stride. This is an Elite Eight team again, and I'm excited about it.
All right, so the Noles ranked again 16th, right, in the poll?
16th, yep.
When do they play again?
I should know this. I don't know. Give me a second and fill some airtime, and I'll tell you very quickly.
Because, like, I have, let's see, I watched the Louisville game. I'll be honest, I've been lax in my college basketball watching here in the last week or so, and I'm ready to dive back in this week. I was just swamped. I mean, I've watched a lot of college basketball for work, but I'm ready to get back into watching for pleasure.
Right.
So
right.
When do they, you got it now?
We do. So Wednesday we host Miami and we don't lose at home. So that's a win.
Miami's terrible. So.
Miami's terrible this year. Then we play Georgia Tech, your favorite little Yellow Jacket team, apparently.
I may pass on that one, but.
Yep. And then we have Boston College at BC.
That's another win. Winnable stretch.
I mean, those are 3 straight games. We're going to just climb.
Should be.
Virginia Tech's the next real game.
Yep. And that should be a pretty good challenge.
They're starting to, I don't want to say struggle, but they just
fall back to earth a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. They were hot. So then a game against Wake, which is a win. But then the real game, here's the stretch. It goes FSU VT, then FSU Wake, then Virginia and Virginia Tech. So you play VT 2 games out of 4.
All right,
probably split that just based on probability.
Should be interesting.
A good team playing them that soon, you're probably splitting that.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious to see if, just in general, I mean, Gonzaga is not going to lose, but does anybody in the Big 12 get Baylor? I mean, that's maybe OK State.
Hey, OK State had them on the ropes and just couldn't do it for a full game.
Maybe, I mean, Texas Tech didn't get them. And I thought they would have a shot. They played them 2 weeks
State
ago.
OK State looked way more athletic than Kansas to me, and I think that's what it's going to take.
You got to find a way to be able to attack that defense that Baylor is so good at. So, I mean, we could have multiple teams that are...
West Virginia's pretty good.
Yeah, West Virginia's pretty good. You're right. That could be an interesting one. We're going to have multiple...
Texas Tech's pretty good with McClung.
Right, but they already beat him. Once, so
Baylor did,
yeah. Two Saturdays ago, but I mean, we could have some really gaudy records of some of these teams going into the NCAA tournament at this point. We could have some teams that literally have played like what appears to be like 12 games. I mean, like Villanova's finally playing again, Xavier hasn't played in what feels like a month. I mean, it is just so weird, this like ebb and flow and stop and start. And I mean, that's part of the reason why I haven't watched much basketball because like Xavier hasn't played in so long that it's just bizarre. Like I don't have like that appointment viewing type game. You know what I mean?
That always helps.
Where something to look forward to. I don't even know when they're supposed to play. They're supposed to play this week. They're supposed to play last weekend. None of that. I mean, it's just been that kind of a year, I guess. But yeah, I'm looking forward to, as we roll the calendar over here into February in another week, really kind of locking in on college basketball for the what'll be the final month of the season, and then March Madness. So it was officially announced last week, right? That Thursday. No, it's the first four, not the first Thursday of the tournament this year.
Yeah, so everyone was complaining about that, but I barely heard it or paid attention. What are the changes?
So Thursday, you know, the first four was played 2 games on Tuesday night, 2 games on Wednesday night, and then the tournament started with 64 teams and the round of 64 on Thursday, right? Which is that just Thursday and Friday is just basketball euphoria. I mean, there couldn't be more games. I mean, it's insane. And so they moved the first four back to where all the games are in one night one day on Thursday. So all four of those first four games are on Thursday. And then the tournament starts in earnest on Friday. So you have the first two rounds Friday and Saturday. And then Sunday starts the round of 32, and it wraps up on Monday. So it's kind of a, you know, you could kind of swing
so
that.
So Friday, like, Saturday is your big day of big basketball?
Days. Which is fine. I mean, that's great. Yeah. But, you know, the Monday versus the previous Thursday having a bunch of games, you know, it's harder to sit there and be like, hey, company I work for, I'm taking Monday, I'm going to lunch early and taking a long one or whatever,
and
on
not
Monday,
coming back,
you know?
And may have a beer or two, which by
like
the way,
Thursday feels like a much better day to do that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Thursday's my favorite day of the week. This is very well publicized.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, they write articles about how much I love Thursday. It's the best day. It's like Christmas Eve's better.
Read
than
about it multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah. TMZ reports. Oh,
yeah, GQ,
man.
I think, had one, and maybe Vogue. I mean, yeah, Men's Health. Yeah, it was
cover
all
article
the
for them. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Cover it was great. Story. But yeah, so, you know, whatever. I guess we should just get used to it.
I mean, now that I hear it out loud, I've heard a lot of people bitching about it just because it's change.
It's
are
just different.
Doing it,
you know,
yeah, are they doing just it just this year because of COVID?
Just this year, yeah. It's just because they're not – because, you know, the first four is usually in Dayton, and then you go to the various sites or whatever. Yeah. I mean, everything's in Indiana this year, so it's like you don't have to worry about travel.
They got
to space it out. You don't have to worry about
– So if we have the tournament, I'm happy.
In what is truly a – hopefully not a metaphor for anything out there, Alex's computer ran out of battery. So that is why everything kind of stopped mid-sentence there at the end. But I do want to thank him for coming on and kind of gutting it out there a little bit while he is not feeling well. And we hope to him a speedy and quick recovery. And hopefully we'll be back doing this in full-fledged mode again here sooner rather than later. But you know, PSA, be smart, wear your mask, wash your hands. And you know, hopefully if we can be better and be more dialed in on this, there will be less of us that have to go through this type of thing. But all the best to Alex, and thanks for him for jumping on. And I want to change directions now. We talked football. We talked college basketball. I want to wrap things up with a quick segment here, a very special Waller of the Week. And it has to do with college basketball, just like we were talking about. And if you all didn't see it, I'm going to insert the audio here. But Mike Krzyzewski, yes, Coach K, one of the godfathers, if you will, of college basketball. He was the one who has, you know, petitioned for everyone to make the NCAA tournament this year. He's made all sorts of pledges to tweak the game over the years, all this jazz. Coach K, some love him, many hate him. His Duke team's not very good this year. And if you're not a Duke fan, it's very entertaining when Duke has one of its rare off years, because it just, you just never see it. And all of a sudden, Coach K's having to answer all these questions about a team that is losing games all the time. It's just, it's bizarre and unique and fun for those of us that kind of relish in that a little bit. And Coach K was asked this past weekend in his post-game press conference about, you know, the loss. It was a close loss, and how they would go beyond it. But I'll play the audio for you now.
Hi, Coach. I'm just curious as to what the next step forward here is for the team as you guys move into another week of basketball.
Yeah, why don't we just evaluate this game? You know, I'm not into what our next step forward is right now. we just finished the hard fought game. Yeah, I don't know if like when you, what's your major? What's your major at Duke? What's your hardest class?
Econ.
Okay. So say you just had the toughest econ test in the world. And when you walked out, somebody asked you, what's your next step? You see what I mean? Does that, you have some empathy and, you know, just give us time to evaluate this game and then we'll figure out just like we always try to do.
What is Coach K doing? What is he doing here? Like, kid asked a perfectly normal question. I call him a kid. I mean, he's a student who's trying to learn about this business. In this day and age, I will say, like, I'm not going to go all like blog boys or whatever, but like the amount of access that there is, there's so many more people that can get in to these press conferences. And now this year with it being Zoom related, like even more people can get in and potentially ask questions. And so you don't have, and I'm not saying you have to have this, but you have less people that are trained in these type of environments. Yeah. I don't think we need Big J journalists all over the place that have graduated from some big journalism school, but to do a good job in this industry. But at the same time, you should have somebody have taught you a level of decorum for how you operate a press conference. This guy did it the right way. This student did it the right way. And Coach K comes after him and asks, what's your major? Like, what is that? I mean, who cares what his major is? What was Coach K's major? It wasn't coaching. I mean, was he an education major? I doubt it. I mean, other than that, then he's doing something that's not in his major. And to make that weird analogy at the end, I mean, Coach K, we get it. Your team's bad. He already bailed on the rest of the non-conference schedule earlier this year. And if the team gets much worse, he may just opt out of everything altogether. But it's hard for everybody this year. Your team's not very good. Just own up to it. I feel like Coach Cal's done that. Kentucky's terrible. And Calipari sat there and, for the most part, owned up to a lot of it. For some reason, Coach K just can't wrap his mind around the same thing. And with that, because of that, he is our Waller of the Week. First one we've had in a couple of weeks, but I took a great pride in bringing it back for him this week. All right, well, we hope you enjoy the college basketball this week, NBA, NHL, whatever it is that tickles your fancy. And next week, Alex and I will be back. We'll be talking more basketball. We'll be talking about the Super Bowl matchup in more depth as well. And we're fired up. Looking forward already to next week and what that holds. But until then, for my partially absent co-host, Alex Turco, who sends us with a parting shot, go Noles. I am Scott Manzi saying so long on this week's episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.